Everybody doing?
Oh man, he is back.
Welcome
he
me
just
back.
Went into that opening.
Welcome me back.
Committed.
Okay, it's not about you.
Committed.
No, I'm just saying.
Yes.
I'm welcoming myself back.
That's
yes,
good.
We had our hiatus, then it was just Emily and myself.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And now we're back together again.
Now we're back together again.
The tres amigos.
The three musketeers.
Absolutely. We have an awesome interview coming
Super
up.
Super exciting.
His name is Nick Novicki. He's a comedian, a writer, and he's an activist for people with disabilities in entertainment and representation. And he's just a really wonderful guy. So I'm very excited for you guys to hear the upcoming interview. Before we get into that, let's talk about the news. As usual, the gun march, March for Our Lives. The gun
yesterday.
March for Our Lives was yesterday. Did you guys go? We didn't go together. Did you
I was
go?
Unable to go.
That's
I was
okay.
Unable to go, but I had a lot of friends send me photos of going to their rallies.
And some of the signs that were circulating online were unbelievable. The one you saw was really funny.
Oh, I liked. Yeah, I went. Okay, so I'm not trying. I wasn't trying to shame you guys because James and I didn't go to the
Women's March. It's okay.
So I've missed all the march. I'm sorry. This has been a very busy year for
me
so far.
Well, you know, we talk about how you need to march, but then you need to do things in between the marches.
Exactly.
And that's what you're doing. It's a good balance.
And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But you were saying your favorite.
The sign you saw and posted was really funny. Not funny. I mean, we're talking about gun control. But if I die in a mass shooting, please mail me to Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Another sign I saw online, I don't know which city, but it said, this isn't a red versus blue. This is a death versus money, which was interesting. And then I saw one, and Huffington Post woman posted this one and goes, this is a pro-life rally. And I was like, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Yep.
Because we're tired of people dying from guns.
Sure. We sure are. Yes, I thought a friend of mine posted this online, but I wanted to highlight it. They talked about how amazing it was that a lot of the Parkland teens are mostly white teens,
mm-hmm.
and they brought on stage with them people of color that have been affected by gun violence,
mm-hmm.
And they sort of seeded the stage, which is what progressives talk about all the time. It's what Black Lives Matter talks about all the time, is that if you're a white ally, you should seed the stage. To people that have gone through this experience. Black
Before.
Lives Matter
yep.
has been dealing with this problem for a lot longer, and now there is more news on it. And, you know, there probably is a racial element to that. I mean, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go to the March for Our Lives Twitter account, a March for the number four, Our Lives, they actually post some of the speeches from the students.
Oh, yes.
And there's actually one, Naomi Wadler. She's 11 years old.
She's 11.
Yeah,
11
Naomi
years
Wadler.
Old.
It was,
and she was like,
it was
it's
beautiful.
Yeah. Like she, like,
I was like, obviously this child has a lot of skills, but whoever is helping them and guiding them to learn how to be activists this early is wonderful. And it's so important because, I mean, I totally believe that they're wonderful, but like that we have these... We're developing these like mentors along mm-hmm. the way, right? Because mm-hmm. this 11-year-old didn't know how to create this amazing speech, but she was clearly guided, and it's awesome.
But even to feel compelled to want to say something, you know,
get up in front of all those people.
Unfortunately, being the older generation, because I think we can say that about us at least at this point, that like you know, unfortunately, we've created this society that they have to grow up a little bit faster than they need to because they do have to worry about going to school and especially for young women of color, where they are not on the front news story. They are not getting the headline coverage on CNN, you know, but they're getting shot too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's I love the solidarity of this march.
Martin Luther King's granddaughter
mm-hmm.
got brought on stage. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
it's
just great that all these people were brought up, and I'm glad that this was such a successful march, not only here, but in DC, Florida, it happened like there, it was going on everywhere.
Yeah, Atlanta, Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a small one in Kansas City. I mean, not small, but small in comparison.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But amazing that it's happening.
Yep.
Yeah, the one in LA was packed. A lot of folks.
Anyways, but again, the thing I think the takeaway from that is beautiful march, beautiful showing of a number of people. But do things.
Yeah.
Now we do things.
Exactly.
Every day.
And if you want to know, your Senate switchboard is 202-224-3121. Call that up. They'll ask you where you want to be patched in. Marco Rubio told students that he didn't agree with the March for Our Lives.
It's challenging.
So the if you want to call, so Marco Rubio said this, if you want to call and complain to him, get him out of office, 202-224-3121. Vote in November. That's what those kids are talking about. So let's move on to Russia.
Let's plow through it.
The Stormy Daniels interview is today.
Oh. All of our eyes just got really big.
They just got big because I also remember there was a bulletin point that I think one of her lawyers has apparently a DVD copy of evidence.
Michael Avenatti.
Yeah.
Her like Rhodes Scholar lawyer who's also a race car driver. He's awesome. Really, take a look at that guy.
Big
that guy
fan of him.
Wait, what's his name? 100%. Oh, no. What's the guy's name on Silicon Valley? Is it Russ, something like that? It's the guy that like he rides around all the cars.
Guy says, this guy fucks.
Yes, that guy.
Yeah,
that's what that reminds me of.
No, honestly, he's like a legitimate race car driver. So, that's my dishwasher.
That he loves.
Yeah, he's
that we
so
are
proud
not going
to
give him any airtime to talk
so
about. So back to Russia.
Yeah, so back to James. For once, Emily. That's how much Emily wants to talk about Russia and not the dishwasher.
It's a countertop dishwasher.
We
it was affordable.
Are not a dishwashing podcast.
Doesn't
we're
use
a
lot
news
of water.
Podcast.
It's really nice. My mom got it for
we
me.
We are not sponsored
so once
by
again.
The dishwashing company.
Dishwashing
James,
lobby.
Go. James, go.
Big money.
James. So,
big dishwasher.
This Daily Beast article by Spencer Ackerman and Kevin Polson. Exclusive lone DNC hacker, Guccifer 2.0, slipped up and revealed he was a Russian intelligence officer. So the Guccifer 2.0, the lone hacker who
quotes.
Took credit, that's
James
in quotes.
Quotes. It's also written in quotes.
Yeah, it's also written in quotes. Who
air
took credit
quotes,
for
everybody.
Providing WikiLeaks with stolen emails from the Democratic National Committee was in fact an officer of Russia's Military Intelligence Directorate, or the GRU. The Daily Beast has learned. It's an attribution that resulted from a fleeting but critical slip-up in the GRU tradecraft. That forensic determination has substantial implications for the criminal probe into potential collusion between President Donald Trump and Russia. The Daily Beast learned that the special counsel in the investigation, Robert Mueller, has taken over the probe into Guccifer and brought the FBI agents who worked to track the persona onto his team. Trump's longtime political advisor, Roger Stone, admitted being in touch with Guccifer over Twitter's direct messaging. They need to stop.
Direct messaging
people on Twitter.
There are other ways to communicate.
I mean, like, not. I mean, I'm glad
who
like,
was
we can
find
it. Who
the last person you direct messaged on Twitter?
No one.
There you go.
I never.
Carry on.
We've gotten guests from DMing.
I mean, I've sent them out, but I haven't got response. No, I can't really consider it a...
I've gotten a couple guests from DMs.
I can't really consider it a conversation.
I don't want to say who it is. I don't want you to bother them, but
it was us.
It works.
But if you Twitter message all of our guests, some of them will
reply.
Some of them will reply. Apparently not to me, but to Nick, yes.
So
the point being that this guy who was, he considered himself the lone DNC hacker, by sheer stupidity, he got found out.
That's amazing. Well,
that's amazing.
I think it's amazing that this is happening so fast. I really do think that we are getting high hope to the end of this book. Because
you know, we say that every week, and we're on what week are we on? Like 43 or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anywho,
I think it's amazing that this guy almost immediately various cybersecurity companies and individuals were skeptical of Guccifer 2.0 and the backstory he had generated for himself. And then they like tracked him. It's like a spy novel.
It is.
It's a spy novel.
This is definitely going to be like a Netflix series in like T-minus a year.
I have said this so many times. Jim Carrey needs to play James Comey. I feel very passionately about it.
Let's DM Jim Carrey on Twitter and tell him that.
I feel very well.
Then he can come on the pod.
He's making those paintings.
Yes, he's making those paintings.
That's right.
I'd be curious to see what response you'd get because I don't know if it would be in English.
What if he said, "All righty then"?
It'd
be great. That would be great. I do remember.
Yeah, right.
I felt weird saying
that
out loud. So this is another thing from Vice News about Cambridge Analytica. So Channel 4 News. Released a thing recently, like a whole video expose on it. And the report revealed that their CEO, Alexander Nix, and other Cambridge Analytica executives admitted to using a range of underhanded tactics in order to sway the outcome of more than 200 elections around the globe, secretly campaigning through a web of shadowy front companies and subcontractors.
So many elections.
One of the most stunning revelations by Nix was his willingness to use sex workers to gather dirt on clients' opponents and use the information to discredit them online.
Is that stunning, though?
Blackmail was used. Yep. It says bloodstream of the internet. While the practices of Nix describes are relatively crude in their approach, the company also offered much more subtle approaches, which left no trace but were just as effective. Mark Turnbull, the managing director of Cambridge Analytica's political division, told the reporter, "We just put information into the bloodstream of the internet and then watch it grow, give it a little push every now and again, like
blood
a remote control."
Stream.
Cambridge Analytica has, I think Kellyanne Conway worked there. What's his name? Worked there. Steve Bannon worked there. It's connected to Eric Prince, who is the CEO of Blackwater, which is sort
of
a militia group.
Interview someone from Cambridge
also,
Analytica.
No, we should not.
No.
And just see what's up.
No, they're probably scrambling for their lives right now.
Eric Prince
just
is.
See what's up.
Well, Eric Prince is also the brother of Betsy DeVos, and we have more than one.
Oh.
He's looking at the sound card. We have more than one. We're a very professional pod here. Anyway, Cambridge Analytica, this is all coming to a head in a big, bad way, and I'm not excited. I'm excited for it
again,
to be done.
We're ready for the novel.
Right. And the Stormy Daniels, I mean, with all this, it's amazing the Stormy Daniels interview might be the thing that takes him down.
Which is today.
Which
so.
Is today. It's a bummer that we're doing this so early, because I think I'm going to have a lot to say.
Well... we'll have next week.
Well, yeah, let's have
anyways,
next week. But between shall we? But between that and also, I don't know if we're talking about it later, but like how Facebook has now gotten ingrained with this, and you know, Mark Zuckerberg is on
finally said something.
Like, up, you know, he finally said something, but he hasn't offered really a solution.
No, he hasn't.
To it, because you know, anyone probably doesn't have one yet. You know, they can just they want advertising money, so they're going to let any company come in and be able to influence you know elections, marketing for different products. You know, like and so like. Facebook itself is compromised anyway, just by the model that it has. So now, not only that, we're having our data breached. You know, just because one person took a quiz, all of their friends are now all their data is being mined. Like it's just so crazy.
Yeah,
it's
also. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg wants to run for president, and
please don't.
No more. Do you know what I think though? And with all this data mining, I think everybody knows, we've all known that Facebook and Google and all of these companies are cell phones. They're data mining.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We all know that.
I mean, any subscription service you have is data mining.
Right. The troubling thing to me wasn't ever the data mining. The troubling thing to me is that we have done such a poor job of educating our populace that half our population was able to be swayed in favor of white supremacy and Nazi politics. I think that's the more troubling thing that we're not really talking about, is how easily swayed our public was. That's my big issue. Not the data hack.
Data hack, I think that's bad,
but we all knew that.
Well,
the troubling thing is we were swayed so easily.
Well, I think what you're touching on is... because it wasn't just this election that they were swayed from. You know, it's like it's all of the history of systemic white supremacy and racism that they've been experiencing their whole lives. So that when this like targeted campaign came on top of that, it was very easy for them to go one way. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're touching on is a bigger conversation about, I don't know, any number of things like education and, you know, equal pay and all the above. Part of the reason why it was so easy is that we've had these years of compounding.
I just
want to
hear more people talk about it, because I was like, the data mining's very bad, but the fact that it could happen.
Everybody followed, or not everybody, but people jumped on the train.
Exactly. Right. It's like if you pour, you know, acid on a flower, it's like going to kill the flower. But we already had the flower on top of a fire. No one's talking about the fire.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not a great metaphor.
Anyway, speaking of fire, there's a lot of...
We didn't even mean to do that.
We didn't mean to do that.
There's, again,
we're back with our president shaking things up. So this is from an article in the New York Times by Mark Landler and Maggie Haberman.
Uh-huh.
Big pod favorite.
Sort of. I'm not.
We talk about Maggie a lot.
We talk about Maggie a lot. She's a great reporter, but I think the New York Times as a whole has done some weird, like their coverage of the Austin bomber. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. Mm-hmm. If I have to see another newspaper refer to a white domestic terrorist, which is what he was, as a troubled child who went to church and then like took up bomb making, I'm going to lose my mind. It's absurd.
Anyway, so the article is called Trump Chooses Bolton for Third Security Advisor as Shakeup Continues. So essentially, President Trump named John R. Bolton, a hardline former American ambassador to the United Nations, as his third national security advisor on Thursday, continuing a shakeup. Really loving that word. That creates one of the most hawkish national security teams of any White House in recent history. Mr. Bolton will replace Lieutenant H.R. McMaster, the battle-tested Army officer who was tapped last year to stabilize turbulent foreign policy operation, but who never developed a comfortable relationship with the president. I wonder what a comfortable relationship with Donald Trump is like.
Very submissive.
Mm-hmm. And lots of McDonald's.
The move, which was sudden but not unexpected, signals a more confrontational approach to American foreign policy at the time when Mr. Trump is facing mounting challenges, including both from Iran and North Korea. And then also later we'll touch on, this is an article, but later we'll touch on the China trade situation. But Mr. Bolton, outspoken advocate of military action who served in a George W. Bush administration, has called for action against Iran and North Korea. An interview on Thursday on Fox News after his appointment was announced, he declined to say whether Mr. Trump should go through with a planned meeting with North Korea's leader or not. So essentially it's another, example of, again, Republican or Democrat. This organization that is our White House.
Well, John
is
Bolton,
very chaotic.
John Bolton is a bad man.
Yeah.
He is a very hawkish guy.
And
he's argued,
forgive me if I don't have the source, but I read that he wants us to proactively just attack North Korea.
Yeah, he wants a preemptive strike.
Let's just attack him and see what happens, which, again...
Well, he said that multiple times on Fox News, and then when he was questioned about it, he was like, oh, don't... That was something that I said while I was on TV. You can't trust...
You're on TV right now, sir.
And then he was like, now I'm the national security advisor, which begs the question, why were you saying that in the first place? Were you just trying to whip people into a frenzy? He's a very
hawkish, as a public figure in any position, whether you're national security advisor or, you know, ambassador involved in the UN or whatever, anything you say on TV, that's how we get information. So anything you say on TV, we're going to believe that that's what you believe.
I mean, if we have to accept,
so you don't just get to wave that around and be like, I was doing it for the ratings.
If we have to accept Donald Trump's tweets as like an official statement,
there you go.
Then you have to be held accountable for what you say in any kind of public forum. Mm-hmm.
I think the other issue too is, the other issue is Bolton's position on Iran. Because the Iran deal, I think the recertification for that is coming up. I could be wrong on that. Or they're discussing, I know they're actively discussing scrapping the Iran deal because they don't think that it was, I think it was a good policy. I think there are problems with it, with a lot of foreign policy, especially as volatile as the Middle East can be. But he wants to scrap this. He wants a preemptive strike on North Korea. I don't even think that he was confirmed when he was in the Bush administration. Bush administration officials have said that he is the worst member of that administration. There are multiple people that have gone on the news. I mean, this is really bad. This should sound the alarm bells. The only person that we really have standing in the way is James Mattis, whose nickname is Mad Dog. Mm-hmm. So,
go figure.
You know, if you can afford a bunker, I suggest you look into it. Trump's lawyer resigns as president adopts aggressive approach in Russia inquiry. This is also Maggie Haberman and Michael Schmidt from the New York Times. John Dowd resigned on Thursday as President Trump's lead lawyer for the special counsel investigation, as Mr. Trump signaled that he was prepared to ignore his advice and wanted a sit down with investigators. After days of uncertainty among the president's lawyers about their status, Mr. Dowd ultimately broke with Mr. Trump over whether he should agree to be questioned in the inquiry, a person briefed on the matter said. Mr. Dowd viewed an interview as too risky, the president reiterated shortly after Mr. Dowd resigned that he wanted to clear his name. I would like to, the president told reporters of the White House when asked about meeting with investigators for the special counsel Robert S. Mueller III. I would like to. This week, the president hired Joseph E. DeGeneva, a longtime Washington lawyer who has pushed the theory on Fox News that the FBI and Justice Department framed Mr. Trump. The former United States attorney in Washington, Mr. DeGeneva, has been on television in recent years more than he has been in court. He has appeared in only 3 federal criminal cases in the past 2 decades, according to the National Database of Federal Court Records, and has not filed an appearance in a federal criminal case in 8 years. So Mr. DeGeneva was going to join the team, and then he didn't.
It's like every day is like, you remember when Power Rangers used to air every day of the week? Uh-huh. So you had to, it was like a cliffhanger to see what happened. Uh-huh. That's what's happening with this administration.
With the administration.
Every day, something else. New episode. Guess what? He's not joining the team.
I think it's, yeah. So this is a Washington Post article from Josh Dossi, Carol D. Lenig, and John Wagner, where the lawyer Joseph DeGeneva, who's often vehemently defended the president on Fox News and cast the Mueller probe as a conspiracy against him. Trump enjoyed his TV appearances and wanted him on his team, even though he did not know him. But in a statement on Sunday, a spokesman for Trump's legal team said DeGeneva and his wife, Victoria Townsend, who is also a lawyer, would not be working on the Russia probe. I mean, they're just leaking people at this point.
I honestly don't have any word to say about that. It's just,
no, just stay informed that his lawyer team. Well, and the other two in the New York Times article, it was amazing because they mentioned that Mr. Trump tried last summer to hire some of Washington's top lawyer to represent him, mm-hmm. but many shied away, aware of the president's history of ignoring his lawyer's advice and frequent failure to pay his legal bills. So, well, amazing.
It's
people
amazing.
Won't represent the president because he won't pay his legal bills. Let that one sink in.
Meanwhile,
our multi-million dollar president, like, he has the money.
He's spending our money for like the Mar-a-Lago trips and golfing and
right, but he has personal money to pay his legal bills.
We should chat about this spending bill.
Yes,
let's do.
We didn't talk about the spending bill.
We didn't talk about it.
Right, there's so essentially Congress passed a $1.3 trillion spending bill that funds the government through September. President, this is an article from CNN, which I don't believe has specific. Lauren Fox and Phil Mattingly. Basically, President Donald Trump signed the bill Friday after he threatened to veto it earlier over lack of an immigration solution. Interesting. Though members of his administration have said as recently as Thursday that the president would not sign the measure. He criticized the bill and warned Congress, quote unquote, "I will never sign another bill like this again." Okay. The package includes more than just money to fight the opioid epidemic, pay the military, and fund more than $21 billion in infrastructure projects. It also includes policy changes like the one that would incentivize states to enter more records into the country's gun background check system. Another that it would cut off aid to the Palestinian Authority until Palestinians cease making payments to families of terrorists. On the left, some of the Democrats rejected the proposal because it didn't include a permanent protectees for the recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, as known as DACA.
Go to unitedwedream.org. Donate.
Boom. Boom. Donate. Yeah, so it has all that in it. And then there was some internal GOP backlash about the amount of spending and the process of rushing the measure through just 16 hours after it was released on full display on the White House floor on Thursday. But might we circle back to...
Yes.
When they were pushing it through in the dead of night with the handwritten... That was the budget.
Oh yeah,
that was a spending bill.
That was the other spending bill. So now we're just everybody's mad at each other for doing the exact same thing.
It's them doing it again. They pushed out a 2,200 page bill that nobody had read. It's one of the first times I've ever agreed with Rand Paul because he was saying this is ridiculous, and it in truth was ridiculous. And then the president at the 11th hour comes out. Says he doesn't want to sign it. He might veto it. He's not involved at all in any of these issues. Mm-hmm. And then he makes a big scene in the White House in the Oval Office. He says that Democrats are using DACA and DACA recipients as a tool. Mm-hmm. What he doesn't mention is that the only way that he was going to grant immunity to DACA recipients was if Democrats agreed to $25 billion in border wall mm-hmm. funding. So he is the one that is holding DACA recipients hostage and I think needs to be talked about more. He is using them as a chess piece.
But he twists words so often that it's hard. I think it's a tactic. He twists them so much that you don't know how to keep up and like how you have to correct him about every 5 minutes. And it's hard. It's hard to keep track of that.
Yeah. I think that Democrats got a lot of things that they wanted, which is great. But I think this ignoring the problem with DACA is not good. We need to be the party that steps up. So Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, the leadership on the Dems, we need to make a bigger deal about it. Mm-hmm. Pretty much giving Trump only $600 million in border wall funding instead of $25 billion. Fantastic. But, I mean, even that's too much. There should be no money for a border wall.
Speaking of that border wall, they were showing footage of him looking at the different designs and all this stuff. It's just so disheartening. I hate that because in my mind, I view it as how the Berlin Wall was up. And it's just such a mark of history that we don't want. You know, it's like that's going to be the thing that we're always going to see. Like, oh, yeah, remember when America had that border wall?
Well, we'll make sure to include pictures of him in front of it.
Gosh.
We're about to be into a trade war with China. This is a CBS News article. China pushed back and threatened new tariffs on pork and other goods. China announced Friday a list of U.S. goods, including pork and aluminum, that says it may be hit with bigger tariffs. President Trump signed a memorandum Thursday directing the U.S. Trade Representative to impose an estimated $50 billion in tariffs on China, which will go into effect in at least 45 days. The Commerce Ministry on Friday called on Washington to reach a negotiated settlement of the dispute as soon as possible, but gave no deadline. It said China last year brought about $3 billion worth of goods affected by the proposed higher tariffs. The ministry criticized Mr. Trump's action as a violation of global trading principles. In response to that, the Dow tanked more than 700 points amid fears of the Chinese trade war, which I think was one of the biggest drops in history for a single day. If that's not true, WeRebelPodcast@gmail.com. Please feel free.
Yeah.
But this is... so.
And other major index tanked too. So the S&P 500 fell 68 points to 2006-43, while the Nasdaq plunged 178 points. So across the board, all of our major indexes were like, oh,
well,
no.
Because he thinks that a trade deficit means that we are just giving money to these countries. So when he talks about a $300 billion trade deficit to China or Mexico, what Trump thinks is that we are owed $300 billion. The reason we have a trade deficit is because we buy goods from these countries. We are not giving them $300 billion. We are giving them the money and then receiving goods. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on. I don't understand.
That's how transactions work.
I mean,
might we call that buying things?
Yeah, I just don't. Okay. I don't understand.
Shopping?
Let's do our Canada Get Excited About, and then let's pop into our very exciting interview. Hopefully, we're all here next week, and
yeah,
we'll talk
about
whatever John Bolton tries to do.
Oh, wow. I was like, I don't have any conflicts. I think we're all together
again.
We're
all going to be back.
I think we're all going to be together again.
That'll be fun.
So, yes, our candidate to get excited about. I'm going to say this name incorrectly.
I know,
so
this name is challenging, but she's a real dreamboat.
So, is it Krish Vignaraja?
I think that was pretty good.
I'm gonna say that that's correct.
If that's not correct, We're Both Podcast.
If that's not correct, we'd love to interview you and pronounce your name correctly
yes,
the
please.
Whole time.
My last name is Scardarossi. So
you
we know. We know.
I'm just saying that I can relate a little bit to
me too. Wansersky.
Oh, that's true.
Anywho, she's
Tolbert.
She's amazing. She served in the. She's running for governor in Maryland. And she served in the Obama White House as policy director for the Queen, First Lady Michelle Obama, and the State Department as senior advisor under the Secretary of Hillary Clinton and Secretary of State John Kerry. She has had a whole long career in public service because she knows and on her website it says she knows how differently life could turn out. She was 9 months old when her family escaped from a country on the brink of a civil war and built a life in Maryland. Her parents came to this country with no jobs and $200 in their pockets.
Wow.
In Maryland, her parents served as public school teachers in Baltimore City, and then the Baltimore schools kind of became more than an employer for her parents. They became part of the family as the teachers and principals helped new immigrants navigate the country. So she's really, she's really got a deep relationship with the city in which she's running in, which is amazing. Her interest in public service and grassroots policy began at an early age. She was knocking on doors with her mom to support a senator when Senator Barbara Bulsky won her first historic race for Senate. And then in college, she continued to, remain very active and obviously went on to work in the Obama White House because she's got some experience, one might say.
Sounds great.
Some of her issues, she really wants to focus on education, families, environment, and the economy, fixing public schools, guaranteed You know, as far as the family thing, providing affordable health care, that includes gender equality and supporting immigrants and reducing gun violence under the environment. She wants to, you know, continue to lead and help climate and clean energy change and the economy. She creates, wants to create 250,000 well-paying private sector jobs. So, and support small businesses. She's a dream.
Fantastic. If you want to know more about her, go to krishformaryland.com. That's KRISHFORMARYLAND.com. UnitedWeDream.org. Donate, get involved there. Call your senators at 202-224-3121.
And stick around for our awesome interview.
Fivecalls.org. Swing left. You know, just
drain the NRA.
Drain the NRA.
We got lots to do, everybody.
We have a lot to do. Resistance isn't just about a march. It's about continued action. Keep going. Stick around for the interview. It's good to be back. I think my dishwasher is done.
Oh, stop it.
Bye. Okay.
Guys, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Hi.
Hello. We are very excited for our interview portion. We're sitting down with Nick Novicki. He is an actor, a comedian, producer, writer, director, advocate. You do a lot of stuff. So welcome to the pod.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. And Nick did my comedy show, and he's a very funny comedian. I love when we have comedians on.
Thank you.
Because it's always like
feels like friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just hanging out with our friends, talking about changing the world.
Just hanging out. Joking through activism.
Joking through
activism. Because if we weren't laughing, we'd be crying. But there's our podcast title. Found it.
If we weren't laughing, we'd be crying?
No. Joking through activism.
Oh, yeah.
mine was much more depressing. That was way funnier.
Yeah, I thought for a second, I was like, oh, it's long, but okay.
Thanks for your blind support, Nick.
Yeah. No, hey, I was on board. Yeah. So, yeah, we, like you said, you've done so many things and just want to talk about like representation on film and how you got involved. And we always like to start with asking our activists, like, how did you get involved in all of the work that you're doing before we jump into it?
Well, for those of you that can't see, I'm 3'10", so I'm a little person. No one can see, so that's easier because it's a podcast. Mm-hmm. But basically I've been a comedian and an actor since I started, you know, when I was 18. But really early on, aside from just doing stand-up, I was always like producing my own content because I realized, you know, I'm 3'10". So if I want to play the romantic lead, I want to be the gangster, I want to be the kind of role I want to play, I gotta write it, create it, produce it. So I've always been kind of producing my own content. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been lucky to still work a lot as an actor along the way, in like winning the lottery kind of auditions that I've gotten, or you know, working through other people. But basically it's work gets you work. I mean, with people with disabilities, we're 20% of the population with some form of disability, but less than 2% of representation. So the numbers don't really add up. Nothing really had been changing. I was getting sick of, you know, what was happening. So I created this Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge, mm-hmm. Which is a weekend film competition where over the course of a weekend, you write, shoot, edit, and submit a 3 to 5 minute film that has somebody with a disability in front of or behind the camera. And it comes with all these really amazing prizes. You screen at the Chinese Theater. You get set up with big mentor meetings with casting directors, agents, network executives. You get Dell computers. And so that was 5 years ago. That was me really by myself doing it. And it's grown each year. Last year, I partnered with Easter Seals, which is the nation's largest disability services organization. And it really kind of just blew up. You know, now we get CBS Entertainment Diversity Inclusion as a sponsor, and Universal Pictures, UTA, Variety, Deadline, Nike, you know, so we've, you know, Bentonville Film Festival. So it's grown a lot, and it's kind of crazy.
I love that you saw a problem and you solved. Like, you were just like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And jumping in. It's like,
I don't know if it's solved the
that's
problem.
That's true. Yeah, not solved. Not, like, I shouldn't say solved,
still,
but like,
it's still like a crazy, I mean, yeah. I think that's a lot of, honestly, the credit to the success of it is that there really are almost no solutions. And it is a solution. It's not like, it's not going to solve the problem, but it is starting to solve the problem. Because when you get more people that are able to take their career in their own hands and they're inspired to create their own content, you know, we're going to get a Jordan Peele in a wheelchair or somebody that's going to really blow up to that next level. I mean, we've already seen some people that are like really, really making awesome stuff and getting great opportunities because of the work they're doing.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like the structure of it just forces people to generate content and get it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. that's like, it's not, you don't have to have the perfectly crafted person with so many different depths with disability and whatever. Yeah. It's like, they happen to have a disability and there's a story, so let's get it out. And so mm-hmm. getting people in the practice of just including people with disabilities in their thought process yeah. as an option
yeah.
is huge.
And it's, you know, I mean, just like what you said too, it actually really helps. Like for artists, we all know that like we need deadlines. Otherwise we don't, I mean,
totally.
I have scripts that are
absolutely.
Like, uh-huh. I'm still waiting on that third rewrite, like, yeah, you know, yeah, totally. A year later, you know, or things, but you know, we just don't want to finish unless we have to. We're like, wow, I got this network meeting. And then boom, we're like writing more than we wrote in
like the past 3 years. Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
Something. But with this, it does that same thing. And the cool thing is, I think because it's such a short time frame too, it really kind of goes with like a stream of conscious where people don't focus so much on
yep.
the disability. It's just like, ah, I got this guy with CP. Let's find, yeah, he's an accountant now. You know, here we are. We're doing this thing. And
yep.
it's, mm-hmm. so it's not really, mm-hmm. and that's what I like. A lot of times I really stress that the disability doesn't have to be the storyline. It just has
yep.
to, you know,
right.
just show the film, let that come out.
And I think what's so brilliant about that is that it's not just like diversity and equity, it's actual inclusion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not just, oh, we checked the box. It's like, no, they're just happened to also be at the table.
Yeah.
You know, and mm-hmm. now we have this short film. Boom.
Yeah.
Next one.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. How did you decide on that structure of like,
well, I've entered,
you know, 48
like,
hours or whatever.
I've done a lot of those kind of competitions myself. And I remember doing one of those, and I was like, I'm probably the only person with a disability that did this year and possibly ever that like
right.
wrote, directed, produced, starred, and you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe there are others, but I was like, this is a great way because people are always like, we need to include them. I mean, I've been going, I'm on the, you know, in the Producers Guild Diversity Committee, I'm in the mm-hmm. SAG-AFTRA People with
yep.
Performance with Disabilities Committee, all these committees, all these different things. There's panels all the time. We need to change,
yeah.
we need to change, we need to do, but it's mm-hmm. like, we're always talking, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, kind of like, oh, wait, this, we could do this, and this would be a way where, like, it would incentivize people to work with disabilities.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And for myself, I know that I work with the same people always. When I'm, like, doing my own, like, shorts or pilot or, you know, movie, I want to go to my same editor. I want to go to my same camera guy that I'm
mm-hmm.
comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
usually the same actors that usually we work together.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea is, like, if you bring in somebody with CP or somebody in a wheelchair or somebody with autism, then they're going to have their own group, you know, because once they work once, they'll usually work again.
Yeah. I'm curious. I want, because we're talking a lot, I think, actors and representation in front of the camera,
mm-hmm.
but I also want to talk about behind the camera.
Yeah.
Because I know when, what was it? What is that Matt Damon, Ben Affleck show on HBO? Greenlight?
Project Greenlight. Yeah.
Matt Damon got in a lot of trouble because he said, it's more important to have diversity in front of the camera than it is behind the camera, which he was very wrong about and
yeah.
got a lot of deserved flack for. And so I guess I want to talk more about, since you started this, has there been more representation behind the camera as well? And what are some challenges that we don't necessarily know about because of that? Because nobody films behind the scenes. I mean, people
yeah.
don't watch that actively.
And we're actually really trying to capture more about what happens behind the scenes and get people to really do more like vlogging about the process of making films so we could see it. Because really, we don't know that much unless you win. And then I'm like, oh, and the guy's deaf. You know, that's awesome.
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
It's basically
yep, totally.
Like, we're, you know, or the girl is that, you know, it's
mm-hmm,
been
mm-hmm.
like we basically, you just submit a film. So the process is you register
mm-hmm.
and everyone that registers, you go to, if for those of you listening, you go to disabilityfilmchallenge.com, you'll register, you'll go through Film Freeway, which is you'll sign up there,
mm-hmm.
add a project, call it EDFC 2018, whatever you want, placeholder title. Then you're going to, at the end of the, you know, you'll submit. We have discount promo codes, 50% for students,
mm-hmm.
20% for SAG-AFTRA, a lot of different, you know, codes. So reach out if you think you could qualify for a code. But basically, once you're registered, you're going to get an assignment and that will be emailed to you. And then we don't really talk to you. You just submit your film.
Okay.
So from all over the world, you could be wherever you are. If you're in Nebraska, if you're in Arkansas, if you're here, if you're you know, you just make your film and submit it. And then after we do for categories, best film, best filmmaker, best actor, and then best awareness award. And the best awareness award is like a 2-week competition where you're trying to get the most likes, shares, and press for your film.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of snowball off each other. But so up until really the awareness campaign, then people are interacting and we're seeing more stories about who the cast and the crew is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But up until that point, I don't really know as much until they end up winning or becoming finalists.
Yeah.
But we do the cool thing, and this, that was like the longest answer.
No, about no, that, no.
Behind the camera. But the we do end up seeing more and more people with disabilities working behind the camera for mm-hmm. the first time, you know, being mm-hmm. a writer, being like the director, usually producing. There's still probably more actors with disabilities or more, you know, participation in terms of like performers with disabilities, because some films will have like a sole cast of people with disabilities mm-hmm. or, versus just one. So overall, I would say there's probably more people still performing, participating in front of. But in each of those, almost every film has participation of like in this, whether it's in the writing or in the producing
yeah.
from mm-hmm. somebody with a disability. Very rarely are we not seeing that. But I think it's important. I mean, I think that's really where you're going to get the authentic tales too. When,
yeah.
when you got, mm-hmm. you know, somebody, if I'm writing about the life of a little person, it's going to be more authentic than somebody that's like trying to like focus so much on like things that aren't even like a big deal to me at all or other little mm-hmm. people. So I think that's a big, you know, part of it is in writing first and foremost, because that's where the, you know, I think it all lives and dies on the pen, you know, because that's where the story starts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, getting more directors, getting more, you know, people that work in editing. See, the thing is, especially with disabilities, I mean, yes, it is a little harder, you know, to be an actor and you have a disability. I mean, because there's still the stigma that you need to focus the whole storyline about that disability versus mm-hmm. let
right.
somebody just kind of come in and have one line and just be sitting at a bar and you never address that that person has Down syndrome or, mm-hmm. you know, yep. something, you know. But when, in terms of working behind the camera, I mean, there's nothing that prevents you from being a color corrector or an editor or a post sound engineer. Yeah. So I think those are really important. And having more of that out there, and the producers are interacting and showrunners with these people, oh, and they're just doing their job. Then they start writing that more. Because a lot of it is the reason why we're not seeing this, the representation that should be versus percentages mm-hmm. is because writers are not exposed and mm-hmm. showrunners and producers are not exposed to people with disabilities. So they're like, oh, that's crazy. You know, that's not my life. You know,
yeah.
and when mm-hmm. it is, like speechless. His brother
yes. loves yes. Speechless.
Mm. You know,
oh,
CP,
that's so funny.
Who Scott Silveri mentored the winner of Best Film last year, and he is a great guy.
Yeah,
the show is amazing.
I actually just I directed a video for a foundation, and Micah Fowler came to speak.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Cool. And
he's
it,
awesome.
He was amazing. It was a really beautiful event for CP and raising money.
Oh, cool.
For awareness. Yeah. So it was like it was a really yeah.
Yeah, but that's somebody that like had he was like embedded in that community,
mm-hmm,
and so it's like him writing about it, just like yeah, I can write about that. But some people, I think, just like they don't want to just include us as like, you know, small roles.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's I'm glad you bring that up, because I think I want to say within the last, let's say, 10 years, we've started to get better about inclusion for people with disabilities. You know, and even the way like now, like yeah, that show, I think The Good Doctor, the lead yep. character, the character is autistic. I'm not sure if the actor is.
No,
I don't think he is. Yeah, no, the actor is not.
Freddie Highmore.
Yeah, no,
that, yeah, no, he's
yeah,
not.
No. I auditioned for that role also, and mm-hmm. yeah, very. They were not looking.
They so, were, okay.
I just
no. It's fine.
Me but, and Freddie Highmore always are going head to head. So yeah, just
is,
kidding.
Is
I'm
that,
kidding. That was
that,
clearly
that
a joke.
Oh, okay, yeah. I don't know if it was a source of contention or
bombed.
Not. But no. So between that and, you know, I think like I think R.J. Mitty on Breaking Bad, like they yeah, actually yeah. like he had CP and like mm-hmm. you know like it was. I think it was nice to see a reflection of a normal family. Like, you know, like there are parents who yeah. are struggling to raise a child that has a disability. And, you know, we can talk about that. We can bring that up. And yes, you know, like writers don't write that stuff unless someone either brings it to their attention or knows like, hey, this is a thing that happens. We can reflect this. And I'm wondering, like, I don't have any numbers, but I'm sure there isn't a depletion of of actors with disabilities, you know, they're just, I'm sure there's a lot of them that can act, that have the talent. And, you know, and, you know, we get breakdowns like we see. And for those who don't know what those are, it's just, it's literally a list of like characters and roles for a project. And, you know, for a actor who has disabilities, you know, is it, what's it like for them to like go and like, hey, like I could do this role, you know, and like, how can I change your mind and let you know that despite what I have, it's actually a gift that I have and I can use this for my acting. Like, is that easy to transition and change minds? What is that like?
Yeah. I mean, it's completely frustrating. I'll be honest. You know, there was times when I've really made a living since I was 18 as an actor, you know, that's stand up and other stuff has been like supplemental. I've done stand up the longest. But acting has been so like when you're only getting 3 auditions a year and that's like your, you know, because I was living off of like I would still get hired from other people that I worked with, but just not getting the auditions. It was like, ah, you get so mad. And I think that's a common experience for people with disabilities. And I and a big issue is that even when there are these stories, just like you said, with the good doctor, they're usually not going to people with disabilities. They're going to people that, you know, are portraying people with disabilities. So it's frustrating because, you know, there are a lot of talented people that aren't getting enough swings at the bat, you know. But I mean, part of it is it's up to us to create our own content, and it's part of society to want it and be like, yeah, we need more of this. Or, I like that.
It's interesting. I heard this man speak at a dance conference. His name is Aaron Dworkin, and he brought up the Rooney Rule, which is in the NFL, where in 2009, I think it was, or 2003, I'm not sure, but they just had to interview a head coach of color. So like whenever there was an open head coach position, defense, offense, whatever, they just had to interview someone of color. And then the numbers from that time to the present has like totally changed just because they opened the door.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's a world in which, you know, like who sets those kind of regulations in the acting industry that could say, when you have a lead role open on a show that has at least X episodes, you have to interview someone of color. It's like a writer.
I think, though, that, yeah, I mean, audition. That inclusion writer thing is big, too. And we're, you know, pushing to get involved in that in a big way.
Yeah.
And Stacey Smith from USC that wrote that, you know, and started that movement is also pushing for people with disabilities. But I think, you know, really, this is all kind of, I don't know if you guys saw that Deadline article about 87% of projects are already packaged through the major agencies. So it's really kind of an issue where it's like all of the rest of us, working class actors, writers, or producers are all just trying to fight for that other like 10% of, you know.
Well, I didn't see
how
that.
Do we unpack the agencies?
It's harrowing.
So, I mean, well, you know, to UTA's credit, they're hosting our award ceremony and they're sponsoring and, you know, for the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge. I think people want to. I mean, it's tricky. I also have to give credit to the CSA, Casting Society of America. They just hosted a really cool event where you got to perform in front of casting directors in January, and it was an open call over the country where they had casting directors in attendance, and people with disabilities were, you know, came in and did like a 2-page scene just to be in front of people and be like, look, I can do this. I'm good. Look at this, you know.
Yeah. That's
so they're trying. I think people are trying. It's just hard, you know. And and it's this is entertainment business. I mean, that's the second part of it, the business side of it. So I think part of it is that we need to prove that you know, the 20% of the population, if you think financially, that is a large sum of billions of dollars of like income that people spend on, or, you know, 1 in 5 people has a disability. So that means that if you're not disabled, somebody in your family is, maybe your brother, maybe your uncle. So if we can resonate those kind of things where it translates into money, then that's when, you know, it starts.
Follow the money.
That's where. So I want to talk too about, it says you presented at the White House's Lights, Camera, Action 2.0 Disability and Media Summit in December 2016. So if you could talk a little bit about that and the sort of how the previous administration was helping with the cause, and I guess what differences are happening now, if there are any differences, or I doubt the Trump White House is doing anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a limb here.
The difference is the radio silence.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though, that we think about now, which is interesting. The Americans with Disabilities Act, that's legislation that's passed to help people with disabilities. That was founded by Republican administration, the Bush administration. And so, yeah, it's kind of historic right now that the current administration is really kind of stripping a lot of the rights for people with disabilities from the act, the Americans with Disabilities Act. There's not as much funding as there was. I mean, that's no surprise. A lot of different public things are getting cut, funding of arts and disability. So, yeah, I mean, the long story short of it is that I'm probably not going to be invited back this year. But who knows? I mean, they, you know, a lot of it is to, you know, there's all these different organizations that are amazing. I think it's really incentivized a lot of more organizations to get more involved with, because there's a lack of funding for people with disabilities. There's a lack of these programs. So there's all these things in DC. I wouldn't be surprised if I end up going back to DC to do something else or to be at some other kind of event. I actually just got asked to be on the US government speaker series.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Congratulations.
On disability. Yeah. So yeah. So basically what I did there is similar kind of what I do like everywhere when I go. I went to Sundance, I go to different places and I'll talk on a panel and I just go up there and I explain similar to what I've just been talking about, what the challenge is, why I started it, why it's important, why people should get involved. And then sometimes we'll screen a film. You know, sometimes I'll tell a joke. Sometimes I'll, you know, the joke won't work. Like, sometimes it does.
Tough crowd.
And it's, it's been amazing. I mean, the crowds have been so supportive and everybody. And that's how going to these kind of events is where I get more people to enter the challenge. And it's where I get more, you know, people to sponsor the challenge.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a partner of Easter Seals, Southern California, which I'm on the board of directors of them now. You know, they've been around for 100 years. They provide services for people with disabilities and their families. So to have like them also, they've been involved from like political to all these other like organizations. And so it's also given me a lot of opportunities to get in front of like places where like the, you know, big decision makers, where I can talk and explain why the challenge is important and why we do need to incorporate people with disabilities, and why even if you don't want to participate in it, why you should share the films, watch the films. They're cool. You know, they're fun. They're only 3 to 5 minutes. We're not asking you to spend, you know, a year of your time. It's not like that. Read Moby Dick.
War and Peace.
Yes.
In three languages. But that's awesome. So, and so you have the next challenge is actually coming up Friday, April 13th through the 15th. And so so for anyone listening, you can go to disabilityfilmchallenge.com and there's a button to click to register, and you should do it.
Yeah. Registrations close on April 11th. So if you're on April 12th, you're like, but I wanted to do it. No, you got to do it by April 11th.
You got to do it
by
April
11th. There's a deadline for a reason, y'all.
And also, you just got interviewed by Variety.
Yeah.
So I wanted to highlight that article too. So you're getting the message out everywhere.
No, it's been thanks to you guys and thanks to just, you know, like people that care. I mean, I think the awesome thing about the current time is that everybody is like, we need to do more for all kinds of issues. And I'm like, hey, cool. What about disability? What about can we get?
Here's
this?
An issue.
But there's like everybody wants stuff. I mean, it's like the new, you know, like the Oscars is all like diversity. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, finally,
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
So I feel like you've been on like 1,000 panels, give or take.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious that in a panel setting, frequently like misperceptions come up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious either what is the most like hilarious question you've gotten from an audience member, or challenging question you've gotten from a Q&A, or how do you address those, like, one might say ignorant questions that come up around disability in real time?
Because I think I'm getting really good at, you know, pivoting to like talking about what I want to talk about.
Good.
Honestly, like, where I'm like, because I'm just getting used to them. You know, at first I was like, you know, like you're nervous because I'm used to just a comedian. So I'm up there by myself and I'm going to do what I wrote and this is where I'm going to. Mm-hmm. But now, like, you know, you learn by trial or, you know, fire, because if you kind of say the wrong thing or you get too emotional,
sure,
then you just seem kind of crazy to the audience. So the hard thing is, like, you know, this is something I really care about. I'm thinking about it at night. I'm thinking about it when I wake up, when I'm filming movies and stuff, I'm still thinking about it, responding emails. Like, this is something I'm really passionate about. And sometimes when you're really passionate about something, you can go too, like, much, you know, when a question is asked. And people are like, whoa, I just want, like, a simple answer. So it's, like, finding the balance for some of that kind of stuff. And, you know, honestly, being 3'10", like, has been the best training ground for my whole life, because I get crazier questions in a daily, you know, life than I would on a panel usually. So I'm just, those kind of things never bothered me. So I was never like, I was like, this is my, you know, like, joke with a kid or joke with a parent or joke with someone on the street. So I never really, you know, sometimes though I'll get asked questions that are like so, you know, like above my pay grade, where I'm like, what do you think I'm Stephen Hawking? Like, you know, I mean, you want physics? I'm like, I don't know. Like, so you're like, you know, you just,
you're like, there's a really good tool out there called Google.
Yeah.
That's all I can recommend.
But the hard thing too is, like, on these panels, they're, you know, there's all these diversity panels at every major thing. And I've been, you know, really excited and honored to have been, you know, invited onto some recently. But you're competing against people that have been, like, doing these panels for, like, 20 years. So, like, it's like being on with, like, Oprah and, like, somebody else. And they're like, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, I think I said something. I don't know. You know, it's, so it's just getting more experience and comfortable, you know, with being in those things. But that's the cool thing about those panels, too, is you're seeing everybody represented. The LGBTQ community, like, Black people, Asian, like, everybody is all included in these things.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to be like, we're all, I mean, I do feel like a common bind between all minority groups. Like, it's, there is, like, a certain thing where it's like, yeah, I get your, you know. And we share each other's, you know, Glad is always, you know, has been sharing about the challenge and, you know, so it's, you know, vice versa for, like, every other group. We're always Color of Change, who does like this amazing directing program, has been sharing, and we share what they do, and so it's cool.
So I guess if anyone out there is listening and wants to get involved, I know the film challenge is coming up. Are there other ways? Are you speaking soon on any panels that anybody can come check out? And I guess, is there anybody that you want to highlight that, you know, we should know about? There should be a name out there, either in front or behind the camera.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go to, first of all, go to disabilityfilmchallenge.com, check it out, register by April 11th. This is a weekend to inspire change. You could really, you know, get a lot of things to further your career from our mentoring meetings, our, you know, production grants, because the winners all get $1,000 for best film, best filmmaker, best actor, best awareness. Dell Computers, Adobe Creative Cloud subscription for a year, Variety subscription for a year. So there's a lot of opportunities, Nike gift bags, a lot of different prizes and incentives. So register if you can, share it, let other people know about it. If you don't want to be a part of it, watch the films, share those films. But in terms of highlighting, if you hit you're at disabilityfilmchallenge.com, hit the awards tab, go down and look at those past winners. I think the work speaks for itself. We've really seen every disability featured, people of all different races, like, you know, backgrounds, different, like, it's like purely diverse even within the films themselves and the winners. You know, in terms of people to highlight, I would like to highlight them all. but really, there's, you know, one guy that entered the film challenge in 2015. His name is Dickie Hartz. He's gay. He's Black. He's deaf. He had never directed anything before. He directed, wrote, shot something. It was an amazing piece about, like, him being an Uber driver, and he ends up, like, kind of on a date, or, like, with somebody else who's, like, you know, gay and deaf in the Uber, and it's, like, just a really cool, awesome, you know, nice 5-minute short that led to a mentor meeting with Peter Farley, the Farley brothers, Dumb and Dumber, nice. All these things. So that, and then from that, he entered Project Greenlight and won that. And then another Universal, you know, meant like crazy program, not Universal. Universal was a partner in it, but AT&T film, like, telethon kind of thing that gave him like a $20,000 prize. And so now he's like doing other web series and all this other stuff, but it all came from him doing this one short over a weekend. And so, I mean, he's somebody that behind the camera is really, you know, becoming a force, you know, he's doing a lot of stuff. And we've had a couple other really great things come from people making features to web series. But I'm excited for more and more like awesome success stories to come out of the challenge, you know, in the future.
And there's also, might we say, a sponsor button on disabilityfilmchallenge.com if you are someone with money.
There you go.
Or work for someone with money. That's like Adobe, Universal, Dell.
Well,
yes.
Gentle plug.
I mean, you are kicking the door down and doing some amazing, amazing work. And we are honored to be chatting with you about this. I guess lastly, as a nice little wrap up, if someone's listening out there and they want to get involved and they want to, you know, pave a path for whether it's representation or, you know, someone that's involved in another activist circle, as somebody who got up and got involved, what would you recommend?
I would recommend, first of all, if you want to do your own program, do it. Just like what I tell people for the last 17 years I've been doing stand-up, everyone's always asked me, I'm thinking about doing stand-up. I'm just saying, do it. Don't give yourself a date and do it. Like the hardest thing is actually just getting through and doing it. And I think the same parallel with stand-up is in the same with, you know, creating a program in the activist space, that you can't just all of a sudden assume you're going to be, you know, Chris Rock or Seinfeld the first time you get up. It takes time. It's a marathon to get headway. You know, I mean, I had a really successful first year, but still it was like, you know, you're talking about thousands and thousands of hours when it's like just you. It's not just, nothing just happens. You know, this is like 5 years of like full time. But keep going. It's important. If you really believe in it, make it happen and you can get it done, you know, or, you know, just keep finding ways to get what you're passionate about out there more. So try to support other programs. If you don't, you know, maybe see if you could partner with another program to get what you want, you know, to help a cause that's important to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Nick, thank you again.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on. This is just a treat. I love.
No, this is a blast.
It's so cool to just see that the success of all this, and I'm so happy for you
and
for everyone that's been able.
We interview the best people.
We have the best people.
If you guys want to check us out, we're on Apple Podcasts at We Rebel. Email us at
WeRebelPodcasts@gmail.com.
We answer them.
Promptly.
We're on Twitter at We Rebel Podcast, Instagram at We Rebel Podcast. Nick, any socials?
Yeah, you could go to nicknovicki.com, nicknovicki.com, and it's also at nicknovicki is my social.
Cool.
Great.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
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 Campfire.
Hey, Rachel, Oscar.
Yeah, Claire?
Do you love Disney movies?
Uh-huh.
Have you seen them all?
Not all of them.
What do you guys think if we watch them all in chronological order and then talk about them?
Ooh. Oh, and what if we could talk about it with some of our favorite friends?
I love that.
Yeah, and what if we do it inside the Disney Vault?
You know, that's the name of our podcast, Inside the Disney Vault on Campfire Media.
Yeah, check us out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to yours.
That's Inside the Disney Vault.
Let's go. Woo!